Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora everybody, I'm Jordan, host of the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. It's my hope that you find support and comfort in these stories, and I'm really looking forward to bringing you today's episode. Just a reminder before we get started that these are personal experiences and you should always seek medical advice before making any important decisions. I'm not an advocate for any particular model of birth or birth care, and this is simply a platform to share these empowering Kiwi birth tales with you all.
In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Bianca, and Bianca takes us through her pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey with her daughter Rory, who is now 3 months old. Bianca talks us through lots of different things that we haven't spent a lot of time focusing on the podcast so far, which is really awesome. We talk about her pregnancy journey, what it was like trying to fall pregnant, a few complications that she had in her first trimester that meant she sort of struggled to bond with her pregnancy, how she wanted her birth to go, a really positive, beautiful induction story, and then we focus quite a lot on the fourth trimester in today's episode. So if you can't tell by the way that Bianca speaks, she's really passionate about sharing her experience with the fourth trimester and thinks this is something we should talk about a whole lot more, which I definitely agree with. Yeah, so I'm just really grateful that Bianca was willing to come on the podcast and share her stories with us, and I hope that you love this episode. I would love to hear your feedback. If you want to send me an email, you can do that, or pop me a message on Instagram at KiwiBirthTales, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I would absolutely love if you could leave me a review and a star rating. It helps other people find the podcast, and I love hearing from you. Awesome, let's jump into the episode. Hi, Bianca. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi.
Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who's in your family?
So I'm Bianca. I am married to Liam. We live in Whangarei in Northland, and we have one little girl, Rory, and she has just turned 3 months old yesterday.
Awesome. Very cool. And do you want to talk us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you?
Yeah. So we got married 4 years ago, and we tried for a year after we got married and had no success. So we decided to park it, and we went to Queenstown for a bit of a working holiday for, I think, 14 months we lived down there. And then when we came home in November 2019, we decided we'd start trying again. And it actually took lockdown. I think my body probably needed the rest and the break that lockdown provided. And yeah, we were one of the lockdown babies. First week of lockdown.
Yeah. And so were you tracking your cycles over that period of time when you were trying, or what sort of things were you doing?
Yeah, so I was using an app and the ovulation stick. So
yeah,
I was really lucky. I had a really regular 28-day cycle, and ovulation sticks always picked up around the same time. My progesterone levels were low, so just before we conceived, my GP was actually looking at putting me on progesterone cream, but I was really not that eager to go down that path. And then lockdown happened, so I couldn't see my doctor, and I ended up getting pregnant anyway. So it was exciting, and a relief.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And how did you find out that you were pregnant? Did you have early symptoms like missing a period, or did you just take a test, or how did that all happen?
Because we were trying, I'm pretty in tune with my body. I haven't been on contraception for 6 years, so I've just been doing natural tracking. So I knew sort of what my body did in the cycle, and this cycle I had spotting 6 days before my period was due, which I've never had. And I was like, that's weird. And then I started to get lower back cramp and sore boobs, which, again, aren't normal symptoms for me. And I took a test 6 days before my period was due, and it was negative, but I knew that that was quite early to take a test. But I found out at 3 weeks and 5 days, so even before I was 4 weeks, that I was pregnant through like a very faint positive pregnancy test.
Yeah, wow. And how were you feeling when you saw that positive result come up?
I literally lay in bed for like an hour and just blinked at it. Yeah, it was just disbelief.
Yeah. Awesome. And how were you feeling in the rest of that first trimester? So you mentioned the sort of sore boobs. Did that continue, and did you have other symptoms pop up in that first trimester?
So I got nailed with food aversions. So I just went off everything, and it sucked because it was level 4 lockdown. So we had to cook for that whole 6 or 7 weeks. Yeah. So I couldn't have McDonald's or any takeaways or anything like that. So I just lived on like toast and macaroni cheese, so much macaroni cheese.
Yeah.
And I had quite a bit of bleeding in my first trimester, which was quite scary. And when I was, I think I might have been 6 weeks pregnant, I had like quite a heavy bleed. Called my midwife, and she said to go into the hospital. So that was during level 4 as well. So Liam wasn't allowed to come in with me, but they ended up letting him in. And there wasn't the right people on to scan me, so they couldn't actually check whether the baby was okay. And that was on a Friday, so I had to wait over the weekend until I went in for a scan on the Monday, and again had to go by myself because it was level 4. A scan on the Monday to check whether everything was okay. And in that scan, they found I had a subchorionic hematoma. And so I bled until I was about 14 weeks, I think.
Yeah. And so did they explain to you what that meant? I guess for the listeners who've never heard of that term before, do you want to talk to us about what that is?
Yeah. So it's like a pool of blood that sits in your uterus. And it can either... So I think it depends on the positioning of it and the size as to how big of a risk it is to the pregnancy. They didn't seem too concerned about mine, but it was obviously really hard to relax into my pregnancy for that time when you've got bleeding, because all you hear about bleeding when you hear about pregnancy is miscarriage. I'd never heard about people having bleeding and having successful outcomes. But either your body generally absorbs it or sort of bleeds out the hematoma and it settles.
Yeah. And how did you feel as you moved throughout your pregnancy? Did you do all of the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you end up finding out the sex of your baby?
Yes. I was really keen to do the NIP testing, but my husband talked me out of it. So we waited until the 20 weeks. And found out that she was a girl, which I was super excited about. We did the 12-week test. I had a few scans because of the bleeding. So I think I had sort of 4 scans before my 20-week scan. And then I ended up having growth scans towards the end of the pregnancy as well.
Cool. And were you just under the care of a midwife, or because of the hematoma, did you have to be under the care of an obstetrician? How did that work?
Just my midwife. Yeah, she was amazing.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. And how were you sort of feeling as your pregnancy progressed? Did you have many other symptoms that popped up, and how were you feeling sort of mentally?
So I found that the bleeding sort of triggered anxiety and a bit of a disconnect for me. Because for so long I just kind of expected that it wasn't going to end well. I found it really hard to shift into like settling into the fact that everything was okay, my pregnancy was going to be fine, the baby is fine. So I think I put some walls up in the first trimester that carried through my pregnancy in terms of bonding with the pregnancy and Rory before she was born. And I had a bit of an issue with my tailbone. I think just because of how she was sitting, I had quite a bit of tailbone pain and ended up finishing work a bit earlier than I expected, just because I was at a desk job and sitting down just became really uncomfortable.
Fair enough. Cool. And did you do any like antenatal classes or birth education before your labour?
Yeah. So I did antenatal, but I was super passionate about birth. Like I was pretty driven to give myself the best experience that I could. So I did quite a bit of reading. I really liked the Ina May Gaskin book.
Yeah, nice.
And read some hypnobirthing books as well. And I found that those helped with my mindset a lot more than the antenatal. I think the antenatal was really good for Liam though. Just because the partners obviously don't live the pregnancy and they're not the ones that are doing birth research and things like that. So it was good for him to be a part of it.
Cool. Awesome. And did you have much of a birth plan or sort of thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go?
So I didn't do a plan. I just had preferences. I just wanted to focus on what I could control. So I had a really nice birth playlist with music that I listen to sort of most days that I know that I associate with feeling good and safe and happy. I had essential oils. I had Liam and both our mums in the room. And I wanted to have a natural birth, but I also wasn't, like I just wanted me and the baby to both be okay. So I was open to whatever happened and whatever I needed, really.
Awesome. Cool. And did you do anything in preparation for birth, like perineal massage or antenatal expressing, or, you know, there's so many things that, people will tell you to do. So did you do any of that before your labour?
I did the perineal massage like literally three times and found it uncomfortable. I laugh at that now. I only did it about three times and then that was it. But I was having acupuncture and chiro and cranial sessions every week just to prep for birth. And I think that played like quite a big part in how my birth went.
Nice, cool, awesome. And did your labour end up starting spontaneously? How far along were you? And do you want to talk us through, the start of your labour?
So I was induced. I had had quite a few periods where she had been quiet. So I'd gone into the hospital a few times for monitoring. And also my fundal measurement was measuring quite small. So they decided to induce me at 40 plus six. And I went into the hospital first thing in the morning, so 7:30, and had the gel at about 8. And then I was quite lucky. My friend lives right next to the hospital, so I was able to go to her house and just, like, my other friend came over and she made mashed eggs and we sat and watched the Kardashians. And I bounced on a Swiss ball and could feel that I was starting to get contractions, but they were nothing. They weren't painful. And they were pretty spaced. But at about 12:30, I was thinking that I should probably go back to the hospital, have a rest, because I knew my midwife was coming back at about 2:30. So I went back to the hospital and managed to nap between timing contractions, and they were starting to get quite regular at that stage, but they still weren't anything hard. They were still quite comfortable. But I started practicing my hypnobirthing breathing at that point, just while I was in a good mind space to be able to get into the rhythm. And then my midwife turned up at 2:30 and she broke my waters, and I immediately went from 3 to 5 centimeters dilated. And things ramped up quite quickly from there. I was lucky. I managed to avoid having Pitocin, Although they did slow at one point, and she said, if they continue to slow, you're going to need some Pitocin. So I think that gave me a bit of not a fright, but a bit of a ramp up, like I need to get this moving.
Yeah.
So I got in the shower and she showed me sort of like a low hip sway to do to get Rory's head moving against my cervix to get things moving along. And like I was really enjoying the contractions. I don't know if enjoying, but I was just in such a good zone. Was just listening to music and doing my breathing. And then I remember coming out of the shower at about 3:45, and Ange had said to Liam, and Liam had told me that we would likely have a baby at 8 p.m. And I remember at 3:45 looking at the clock and being like, oh, there's no way that this is going to be over in 4 hours. And so I decided to, I was feeling quite tired by that point, and so I decided I'd have a lie down. So I just lay on the bed on my side, and Liam had a heat pack against my back through the contractions, and I was still just completely in my zone, completely silent, just doing my breathing. And I'd figured out in my head that with my breathing, I was doing 4 seconds in and 6 seconds out.
Yeah.
And my contractions were between 4 and 5 breaths long. So I knew that once I got to the end of my second breath, that I'd got over the worst of it, and the next 2 or 3 breaths were just the downwards peak off the contraction. And I found that made the contractions so doable.
Mm.
And then my midwife checked me, and I was 7 centimetres. And so she was quite happy. I think Liam went and got something to eat. Mum subbed in. So I just wanted Mum and my mother-in-law there to just hold space. Like I didn't need them to be involved or... So they just sat in the corner and knitted and chatted, which is what I wanted, just to give it that sort of homely feel.
Yeah, nice.
And so Mum subbed in for Liam. And then Rory's heart rate started dropping. And this was one of probably my only fear going into birth, is that something would happen during birth to Rory. And I think that stemmed from the pregnancy.
Yeah.
But when it happened, I found myself, like, I was just really calm, and I just knew that she was going to come out okay. And so the obstetrician talked to my midwife about putting a head clamp on. But when my midwife checked me, I was 10 centimetres, and as soon as she'd finished checking me, my body did, like, the automatic push at the end of my contraction.
Yeah,
and I found the pushing really full on, just because I'd been so in the zone with the contractions and sort of knew what to expect. And then the pushing came out of nowhere. And so I think Liam found it quite full on as well. He ended up flaking. So I was glad that his mum was there at that point. So she was busy with the cold flannel and the scorched almonds looking after Liam. And
poor Liam.
Yeah, I know. And Mum subbed in for him for the pushing, and Rory was born 14 minutes later. So between being 10 centimetres and her being out was 14 minutes.
Yeah, and how did you feel? Like, could you really feel her moving down as she progressed through your birth canal? Like, what was that sort of feeling like?
Oh, it was the craziest feeling. I feel like you can almost feel your bones shifting as they come down. And it just went, it went against all my instinct was to obviously like retract from the pain.
Yeah.
But so I'm glad that my midwife and Mum were both sort of coaching me through the pushing, because my body was pushing, but obviously I needed to do a bit of my own pushing as well. And so having to push through that pain is, it's a real mental thing. But I think that was probably the most intense or painful part for me. Yeah. Like once I got to 10 centimetres, I said, is that all labour was? Because I didn't. I know, which is, I was really scared to say that because I was like, you're going to jinx yourself if you say this. But because I found the contractions okay, I was quite like taken aback by how different the pushing stage was.
Yeah.
And I think because it was so quick as well, I didn't really have time to process it.
Yeah, fair enough. And so did you like push her out sort of quite quickly in one contraction, or did it take a couple of contractions for her to come out?
So I think it might have been about four contractions. Four or five maybe. And I got her head her head was half out. And then with the next contraction, like her whole body came out.
Yeah. Awesome. And what sort of position were you in when you gave birth to her?
Yeah, one of my things was I'm not going to birth on my back, especially with my tailbone. My chiropractor and my midwife had said, you'll be fine in birth, just don't birth on your back. And because it happened so quickly, my midwife was checking me. It went from being checked to pushing her out in in seconds. So I didn't have time to switch positions and, ended up birthing on my back on the bed.
Cool. And so did they pop her up on your chest straight away when she was born, or what happened from there?
So she came out and she did her cry. She was wide awake, like just looked straight at me, and she got plopped on my chest. And I feel like I was in shock because it happened so quickly. And I don't think I thought that things were going to be okay throughout the whole time. So I couldn't believe that she was there and that it had gone fine and she was fine.
Yeah.
And that pregnancy was over, really.
Yeah, for sure. And did you have any tearing at all from your birth?
Yes. I had a second degree tear and a labial tear.
Yeah, and do you want to talk us through, I guess, what they did about that and what a labial tear means for those who might not know?
Yep. So I got stitched for both tears, and the labial tear, I think, ran along my left labia right up to my clitoris. So after birth, I think that was worse than birth. Having local anaesthetic in your clitoris is next level.
No, it makes me feel sad.
I found the stitching worse than birth. I think because you're out of your zone as well. And your adrenaline's all gone and the stitching was not fun.
And so did just your midwife do that, or how did that work?
She ended up getting a hospital midwife who had worked in the UK, so it had done a heap of stitching just because of the tear was.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. And so what happened from there after they did your stitches? Did you sort of just spend some time with Rory, or did you get to have a shower, or what were the sort of next couple of hours like?
So I had her on the 30th of December. So my sisters were at Rhythm and Alps and had been trying to drunkenly FaceTime the entire labour. Lucky I didn't have my phone. And Mum and Liam had just been busy declining their calls. But I think we accepted a video call from them about, I think it was 8 minutes after she was born. And they were just sobbing down the phone. So that was, that was funny. And we had skin on skin, and she fed within, I think, the first half an hour, and Liam cut the cord. My midwife showed me through the placenta, which was really cool. And then Liam took her while I was getting stitched, and the first shower was amazing, like the best shower of my life.
Awesome, cool. And how long did you end up spending there before you were able to go home?
So we just stayed the one night and left at about 6 o'clock 6 p.m. the next day. So she was born at 8 o'clock at night, and we left 6 p.m. the next day.
Yeah, Nice, awesome. And how did you find going home from the hospital with your new baby and this just totally crazy new experience? How did you find the next couple of days?
I feel like I was just so pumped on adrenaline and high from birth. I think after birth you just feel like a superhuman. So I really struggled to shut off or sleep. Even if Rory was sleeping, I was really wired. But it's just crazy. You prep for so long with your pregnancy and you prep for birth and then you're just handed your baby. And it's just like, wow, I don't know you or what you need in those first few days. It's sort of you're getting to know each other. But it was really special. I had my family all here staying for her first week. And Liam's family live really close, so we had a really big support circle for that first week.
Cool. And did you notice when your milk came in, and did you get any sort of feelings of like the baby blues around that time, or what was that experience like?
So my milk came in, I think, day three. Day two or day three. And I felt really sick. Liam ended up calling my midwife because I was grey and reclined back on the lazy boy because I just felt like I was going to faint. Just couldn't walk or anything. And that went on for like an hour, but that went on for a few days after my milk came in. I think it just came in so fast and heavy that it knocked me. But I was really lucky. I didn't get mastitis or anything like that. It was just sort of the fainting episodes.
It's funny, I actually don't, like, I don't remember anyone sort of mentioning that before I had Jai, but I remember my milk coming in and I thought to myself, I think I actually might have said to my midwife, like, I'm pretty sure I'm getting mastitis because I felt so sick. I was like, and I think I started to get a bit of like a runny nose and I had a headache and my boobs were obviously super sore and I was like, man, this must be mastitis, surely this isn't my milk coming in. But I think that's actually far more common than people talk about.
Because I jumped to the conclusion like, oh no, I'm, because I felt so faint, I was like, I must be bleeding, or jumped to, do I have an infection or something related to birth. I didn't even think about my milk.
That's so interesting. Cool. And so how did you find, I guess, the next couple of weeks and that real adjustment into motherhood and just such a change from what you're used to? Do you want to talk us through that?
So I just think, like, postpartum in general is so overlooked. Like, I didn't look into it whatsoever, and I'm a real like to be prepared, like to do all the research type of person. But when you're pregnant, you're just so focused on the pregnancy and the birth is just this big end goal. But in the scheme of things, for me, it was 5 hours of my whole life. And so I really overlooked the postpartum period. So I wasn't prepped for, like, I knew I'd be sore. I knew breastfeeding would be a learning experience, but I don't think you can prep for like what the pain's going to be like or how sort of tricky breastfeeding can be in those first few weeks. And then on top of that, the baby blues, which I feel like makes it sound cute, is not cute. So I did really well for my first week, but I think that's because I had all of my family here and things, and I think I was almost distracted. Like, I kind of had to do well because I was surrounded by people that whole time. I didn't sort of get that downtime to sort of process what had gone on. And it sort of just felt like a bit of a holiday. We were all so high and excited and high on love. And then everyone left after the first week and Liam went back to work, and then it was like, wow, like reality hits when it's just you at home with a baby and such a massive life shift. because literally overnight you can go from doing whatever you like to never being able to think about yourself again. Yeah. Or and I don't know how you can prepare for that.
Yeah, I think it is such a tough, like, it's a tough thing to explain, I think, and that's why it makes it so difficult to, like, prepare for. And everyone's experience with that is really different. So, yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, and I think, so in antenatal, they'd kind of brushed on baby blues. But from what I'd heard about baby blues, it was like this day three, you might cry for a day. And then, like, it sounded quite minor. But mine lasted from, like, week two until, I would say, like, week six or seven.
Yeah.
And it was literally, like, anxiety and dread about nothing in particular and just feeling so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you sort of, like, overcome that, or did you overcome it, and how did you manage to... Did you talk through those feelings, or what was that like?
So I think I found it hard to address to start with, because I'd done well in the first week. I think everyone had sort of said, oh, you're doing amazing, you're nailing it. And it was hard for me, or like embarrassing, to turn around and being like, actually, I'm not doing well anymore.
Well. Yeah.
And so it took, I think it was my midwife's third postnatal visit, and she asked how I was doing, and I said, oh yeah, fine, but I don't think I was very convincing. And so once she left that appointment, she messaged and asked, like, actually, how are you doing? And I ended up opening up to her and said, I'm actually not doing that great. And she was amazing. Like, she'd check in all the time, and we had just really good, honest conversations. And I think for me, I didn't realize, so I'm normally such a social person. Sitting at home isn't something that I've ever been good at.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'd realize that you can actually, like, you can still leave the house when you've got a newborn. I kind of thought you just had to sit and let the newborn sleep at home.
Yeah.
And no one had really told me, like, go do something. So she was like, you need to get out of the house. And so we put some plans into action, and I started just filling my days with things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Rather than them just being me at home by myself. And that helped so much, even if it was just leaving to, I don't know, get a takeaway coffee and go for a walk, or, I created a coffee group with some girls that I'd done yoga with. So that was, like, that was amazing to talk to other new mums. I think it's so valuable when you're going through that postpartum stage.
Yeah.
And I think if I'd had a new mum talk to me in those first few weeks, like, forget all the cute newborn photos, like, how are you actually doing? Then I might have opened up sooner.
Yeah, fair enough. And how were you going, like, with breastfeeding? How did you find that in those first, 1 to 2 months?
The first week was hard. Like, she was a good feeder, but it was painful. I had just grazed nipples, and I would get restless arms every time she fed, which was, like, the most disgusting feeling. But I found those Silverette cups really good. I wore them for the first 2 weeks, and so I didn't use any creams at all. I just used those, and they were amazing.
Yeah.
And since then, she's been a great feeder. She feeds a lot.
Yeah, awesome, cool. And one of the questions that came up a lot when talking about the fourth trimester was around sleep deprivation and what those first couple of months or weeks and months are like with a newborn. So how did you find that experience, and did you find any ways of trying to cope with that sleep deprivation, and what was Rory like as a sleeper when she was a newborn?
I think she was better as a newborn than she is now, to be
honest. Oh my god, I can totally relate to that.
So she was a real, like, honestly, I thought I had such a dreamy baby. She was such a calm, little, content, sleepy newborn. And then she hit 8 weeks and it was like, right, I'm awake.
So they wake up to the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think you think something's wrong. That was my immediate thought, like, oh my, is she sick or is something wrong? I mean, it's been, she's 12 weeks now, so I've come to realise that it's now just Rory. But she wakes up every 1.5 to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So she's not a great sleeper.
Yeah. And how are you managing with that?
I think women are just pretty incredible, and I do just manage. I still like to get out of the house, even if it's just fresh air or a walk. I've made a bit of a list for myself about non-negotiables, which for me are getting up and having a shower, having a coffee. And then there's things that are nice to do or things that make me feel good, like listening to music or sunshine, fresh air, a walk. So I try and do one of those things every day. And then there's luxury things, which I can do if I've got the energy, which are like real cup fillers. And just focusing on, I mean, obviously my days now revolve around Rory, but also just remembering that my needs are important as well.
I think it's a really, really important call out, because we're mums, but we're still people too, right?
And it's so easy when you're tired to overlook self-care, like not like the pretty self-care, like looking good, but like just to make sure that, I don't know, you've had something to eat for the day or you've got some fresh air, or just those things that actually can make such a difference to how you feel.
Yeah, for sure. And how did you go, I guess, from a physical perspective? Obviously you needed stitches from your tearing. So how did you find the recovery from that, and how are they now?
So I found the first 2 weeks were really painful with the stitches recovery. The Depends adult nappies are a life changer. Those were amazing.
I love those too.
And the period undies, like once the bleeding subsided, those were really good as well. So that was really painful for the first 2 weeks. And then I think I bled for about 5 weeks and ended up getting my period back 7 weeks postpartum, which is really unfair.
No, I was similar. Actually, mine wasn't long after that, and I felt totally ripped off.
Because I always thought if you're up in the night, you won't get your period back, and if you're breastfeeding. So it was a bit of a shock, but but physically, I've had a really good recovery. Oh, I did dislocate my tailbone during birth, so so that's something that I'm dealing with at the moment. But apart from that, it's all been pretty good recovery.
Cool. And if we talk about intimacy post-birth, do you want to take us through the first time, I guess, you and your partner decided to try and be intimate, and how did you find it? So was it painful, I guess, is one of the questions that pop up often. And did you notice that maybe your tearing recovery made a difference, or how did you find that?
Yeah, so I am now 12 weeks postpartum, and I think like doctors, and you're meant to be cleared at 6 weeks, and it's like, that's such a big pressure. 6 weeks, you're meant to be good to go. Yeah. 6 weeks came and I was like, I'm not good to go. And then I got my period at 7 weeks and used tampons and found tampons really painful. And so we have, like, we haven't done sex yet. I just still don't feel ready, and I'm really lucky that Liam is super supportive to wait until I'm ready. And I think just finding intimacy in other ways, like it doesn't need to be sexual, but I feel like we've become a lot closer. Just supporting each other emotionally through this journey, and just cuddles and kisses and stuff.
Yeah, nice. I think it's so nice and actually really important to hear that, because there is such a pressure. I even felt that same pressure, and it's not like my partner was like, we have to have sex, but
I know, it
was
like, it just feels like you need to.
Yeah, there's this, I don't know if it's a societal pressure or if it's because they say after 6 weeks you're pretty much good to go for everything, but I think it's really awesome that you've been able to share that, because there might be quite a lot of other people out there in a similar kind of boat, just wondering, like, how do I have that conversation with my partner, or what other things can I do? So, yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think just being really honest with them about, like, how you're feeling physically, because I can't imagine that it is nice for them if it, you know, if emotionally you're not ready. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I know that you've sort of talked to the feelings, you know, you felt like you had a really positive birth, and when you reflect on it now, do you still feel the same way? And I guess, did that contribute, do you think, to your postpartum journey at all, or how do you feel like that's had an impact?
Yeah, so I was really sort of scared of induction. But I wouldn't change anything about my birth. I think it was the most amazing day of my life. And the pain was nothing compared to sort of the high you get after you've done, like, created and birthed a human. And I think that might have actually had something to do with feeling sad postnatally, because I was just so high after having Rory. Like, I just couldn't stop thinking about how amazing birth was, and I found it really hard to shut off from that and be present. And it was almost like I mourned that day, because it was just such a good day that I was like, wow, I'm never going to relive that again.
That's so interesting. I think it's such a, that postpartum period is just such a whirlwind. And I think probably there'll be people out there that can relate to that too, for sure. Awesome. Cool. And is there anything else that you want to cover that you feel like we haven't included?
I just think with pregnancy that postpartum should be something that's looked at like postpartum emotions should be looked at like postpartum bleeding. Something that is expected and talked about really frankly, so that it's never something that you feel alone in. And also I found that as soon as I started being open with how I felt, especially with other mums, it was like, wow, like, this is, like, I'm definitely not alone in these feelings. And it is so common to have that. It's just that real identity shift, I think. And just trying to figure out where you sit in life, as well as being a mum now.
For sure. I think that's a huge, huge part of postpartum that, it can be quite unexpected, that identity shift and change. So for sure, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, and if you could... like, if I could go back, I would look at having steps in place and support in place, sort of having a bit of a toolbox of tools for myself that if I did find that I was struggling, things that I could quickly look to and refer to when you're not in that sort of dark cloud where you're just like, I don't know how to help myself. And so after that first week where I was surrounded by family, and you've got visitors coming, friends and extended family, and just all this love and support, to going back to reality, that was like quite a stark contrast. And my mum ended up getting quite sick when Rory was 8 days old and ended up in Tauranga Hospital, so 5 hours away from where we are. She was there for 5 weeks. So that was really hard as well, because I think when you have a baby, there's sort of someone that looks after you as the mum, And for me, that was my mum. She was the one that I didn't mind if she was doing our washing or cleaning our house and sort of all those things like that. So without her support, I struggled with that a bit as well. But I was so lucky to have such a special relationship with my midwife. And I feel like in mum's absence, my midwife sort of became that person for me. And those weekly visits became visits where it felt like I was being acknowledged and seen and heard. Because it can be quite easy to feel sort of in the background when you've got a new baby, because everyone is just so focused on this beautiful baby, as they should be. Like, it's really special for them as well. But it's so important to have that one person who is going to look out for you too. I think it can be really hard to be honest about the fourth trimester as well. It can almost feel like you're being ungrateful. Like, obviously, I wanted Rory for such a long time and we tried so hard to get her that when she arrived, I just expected things to be magical. And that's kind of, I knew it was going to be hard, but I just kind of didn't understand why or how. And it can feel like you don't love, or others think that you're not going to love your baby if you talk negatively about your experience. But honestly, I would do the fourth trimester 100 times over to have another Rory. It's been such a special time, as well as being hard.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice and a bit of insight into the fourth trimester, so thank you. And a huge thank you, Bianca, for coming on the podcast and sharing your journey with us. I've loved talking to you. I think you've shared some really interesting things about your story, and I know there'll be lots of other people out there that relate as well. So yeah, just a huge thank you.
A huge thank you for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope that you have enjoyed it. I will, as always, be bringing you another special episode next week, so make sure that you stay tuned.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.